T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It was a goal that we set on Monday, right, when we found out that we really believed the team who got over 30 runs would win, and we thought only one team would, and that was a complete team goal, and that the offense would not have been able to get that many runs if the defense didn't play like they did, and if the special teams didn't play that way also.
Kyle Shanahan talking about a key to victory for his team. He wanted to see 30 runs. He got 47, and the Niners win in dominating style over the Minnesota Vikings, who but for a Stephon Diggs touchdown catch over a player who was then immediately benched. That was as thorough a team-wide ass-kicking as you're going to find at this round in any NFL playoff season. Like, that was comprehensive.
They showed why they're the one seed and why Minnesota's the sixth seed. And you talked about 47 rushes they had, which was 17 more than their goal. Minnesota had 10. Or 20 fewer than their goal, if that was in fact what was going to decide the game. And that's why this has always been about defense, and why the fixation on what they do offensively has always kind of missed the point a little bit. Because they really, other than the New Orleans game, didn't need their offense to save them. Their defense was tasked with that. And game in and game out, even in the ones they lost, their defense stood out. Even in the game in which they lost the ball 5 times against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh got 20 points out of that. I mean, that's amazing. This is a defensive team. Wrap your heads around it, because that's who they are until further notice. Period.
And you're going to need at least another offseason before you get any further notice. No one's changing their stripes at this point in the dance, that's for sure. We got Michael Irvin joining us here on 95.7 The Game. You see him on NFL Network. It's always a pleasure. Michael, brought to us by Porsche of Walnut Creek, a Stead automotive dealer. Michael, good to have you here. Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto with you. And man, oh man, the 49ers and Packers in an NFC title game. Outside of Cowboys fans, that sounds pretty good, right?
Well, yeah, And so interesting how it's the old days again. You remember those battles, the 49ers and the Packers. I remember the T.O. catch and all of that stuff, man, and coming back. And you're right, outside of the Cowboys, would have liked for that to have been the old battles between the 49ers and Cowboys, since we've had such great battles in the NFC Championship game. But what a dominating performance, I think. I thought it was by the 49ers in that Vikings game to put them out of their miseries and win that game.
It was a clinic by Kyle, his coaching staff, and his team. I did not expect Kyle Shanahan to put on a clinic against Mike Zimmer. I really didn't. And maybe it was just because he couldn't get Dalvin Cook going. So the Vikings were off schedule all afternoon. 7-3 and outs means you really had no chance.
Yeah, and that's what we always talk about. Listen, going into the game, honestly, eerie, if you want to call it eerie or however you want to place it, there was a similar situation here. I remember talking about with some people. We were talking about, take the running game away from each one of these quarterbacks and which could survive out of Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins. And you took the running game away from Kirk Cousins, and you saw what happened with that. But not only when you take the running game away, and that secondary played a very good game also. And I love the press conference with Richard Sherman. Sherm has had some great success in life, but he is one of those guys that no matter how much success he's had, he's carried that chip on his shoulder. And some people, it rubs the wrong way, because I heard people even at the network talking about, why is Sherm up there spitting all that about himself instead of promoting his coach? He should have been promoting his coach. I said, I think he did promote his coach, you know, But why does it bother you that guy is that way about himself? And Jimmy, one thing I always love about Jimmy Johnson, and congratulations to Jimmy and Bill Cowell for getting in the Hall of Fame, that he would always say, everybody do what they do. to get to their best spot. Don't worry about trying to do what everybody thinks you should do. Everybody do what you do to get to your best spot. And Sherm likes to have that work, that thing when nobody believes in him, nobody gives him a chance, nobody wants to call him great. That's what he believes to get him to that right spot. Then I don't have a problem with that. I don't know why everybody else gets so crazy about it.
As you're watching the game with your trained eye, at what point did you decide this is over?
Early.
Minnesota's finished. Exactly when you say early?
Well, soon as I saw that they had the clamps on Dalvin Cook. When I saw that, because I was saying on the show, we were asking, are you a believer in Kirk Cousins? I said, I'm a believer that Kirk Cousins may be a chef in the kitchen, but Cook got to do all the cooking. If Cook is doing the cooking, then Kirk could be a master chef. But if Cook ain't doing the cooking, then Kirk is just somebody you took from Burger King that you got enough cooking. That's what that was. Because it all runs around what they do with Dalvin Cook, man. And Kirk Cousins makes great strides. It was a great game he played against the Saints. We have always put a strike against him in big games and playoff situations. And he made some serious throws in that game against the Saints, especially in overtime. But in this business, you get 7 days and you got to do it again. That's just the reality of it. And 7 days later, he could not do it. And so, I knew as soon as I saw that they had a pretty good control on the run game, then I knew Minnesota was going to be in trouble.
I want to double back on Richard Sherman for a second. You said that he is a guy who plays best when he's angry and when he thinks people are doubting him. In a year like this, in which he has basically run the table reputationally, everybody agrees that he was one of the two best cornerbacks in the sport. How hard is it for someone to manufacture things to get angry about when nobody seems to be trying to make him angry? I mean, because I'm sure there's a technique to it, because you had to go through it yourself, because you were a great player all the time, and everybody agreed you were a great player. So how tough is it to manufacture people disliking you when everybody thinks you're doing a hell of a job?
Honestly, Ray, man, you'll blow your mind how easy it is for football players to get there. It's just what it is, because it seems like it's where we all, most of us are at our best. You know, even if you look over the history of most of the kids that make it to the NFL, really, I always work back through their own upbringing, and I tell people, our greatest promise lies somewhere in our greatest pain. And it's somewhere in that your pain, the pain of something pushed them to that great promise that made them work hard to get them in the NFL. And I'm telling you, the year the Eagles won, you know, the Eagles were starting to play teams that they had already beaten before, and they were still wearing that underdog mask, saying, "We're that's like, you already beat these guys. What do you can't be the underdog to people you already beat, but you want to wear that mask and you will find a reason." So it takes any one person to say any one thing, and you'll find people up at the podium talking about, yeah, well, you're talking about what people said about them when everybody doesn't know what people said about them, because maybe only they read that comment. And the rest of the report is like, what are you talking about? I don't remember seeing it. But it was something that you saw, and you made that thing germinate within your spirit until it grew, and then you burst out to make yourself play better. It's the simplest things that guys will grab and start saying, it's me against the world, because that's what they pulled on mostly to get to where they are. So they go back to that source of power.
Yeah, what's the old boxing? It's real hard to do road work when you're sleeping in silk sheets, and you know, you got Richard Sherman, who's going to go to the Hall of Fame, who's won a Super Bowl, been to another, and has come back from a crippling injury, and he is still angry. Again, the chip on the shoulder is an endangered species. And so the athlete who can put it there, whether it's real or imaginary, it's
right.
A skill.
You just said it right there. And especially now more than ever. Now that athlete lived a lot of them living before. But honestly, we've gotten such a place in this country, man, and there's so much success, and everybody's in a better place that really, I wish the Cowboys had more people with more chips on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. That's the whole issue. I don't know if Mike McCarthy, but that's what he has to find out. How can you tap into that source that makes them go to that place, that makes them bring out everything they have? You know what I like to liken it to? You ever hear about the mom who has the baby, and there's a car accident or something, and the baby's stuck, and she finds strength to raise that car up off that baby, because that's where she goes, to that place. Athletes need to have, and most do, they have something that puts them in that kind of place that brings about that kind of strength. And that's all Sherm was talking about. I absolutely love it. I know a lot of people don't, but I believe that's because they've never had that thing that take them to that place.
Michael Irvin here on 95.7 The Game. Since we're talking strength, how strong do you have to be to run 12 consecutive running plays against another professional football team?
Boy, I'm telling you, you just got to be. and understand the kicker to it. Understand the kicker to it. It is more than just, oh, the run's working. It's the run's working offensively, and the run's demoralizing them, their whole team, defensively. It's that whole team. You know, we went in against Buffalo at halftime of Super Bowl in Atlanta, and we were down. They came out. They were up. They got the ball first. We knew. We said, man, if they score, we're in trouble. We stopped them. We got the ball. We must have run the ball 10 straight times, because we had to reestablish who was the most physical in this game, and you wanted to reestablish it, but at the same time, you demoralized them. And I remember watching them wilt after you go 1, 2, 3 runs, 4 runs, 5 runs. Because think about this, and I heard this the other day, and it was so brilliant. It was brilliant. And you know who said it? On that quarterback show, Joe Montana, he said it, and he said it's something that Bill Walsh used to always say. It was so great that the next day, because we were all at the hotel watching it Friday, Saturday when we got in meetings, all of us, to a man, brought up the same point that Joe said on TV, and it was like a boof, blew our minds. He said that Bill Walsh would always tell him, he says, funny, if you hand the ball off and you run for 4 yards, the defense starts thinking, oh, my God, that's too much. We got to stop him. But if you throw a 4-yard pass on first down, the defense think they won that round,
right.
Won that play. Is that not – that's amazing. I was like, that's brilliant. He is so right, because they see the 4-yard run as a loss, and it's demoralizing. But they see the 4-yard pass as a win, because we sold you, we gave you up the short pass. That's a win. Dude, listen, I learned a lot of football in my life. I've never heard anybody break it down like that. I could not even sleep when I heard it. I went back in the meeting the next day and said, dude, that was brilliant. And that's exactly what you see when you go 12 straight runs. You see a demoralizing team. You demoralize that defense, and that's what they did.
Based on that, how difficult will it be for Kansas City's defense to cope with Derrick Henry, or do they just at this point just condition themselves to the notion that they can run the ball 100 times, we have Mahomes?
Well, here, this is, if I'm the defense of the Kansas City Chiefs, you got to run. The only way, don't you go in here, because you already dropped 188 on you, 184. So you can't go in here thinking, we're going to stop this. If I'm the defense, I'm taking all the offensive linemen out. I'm taking receivers, get them some grub, make sure Mahomes is good, because the only help you get is not on your unit. It's on the other unit. You got to tell them they need to score early and try to score often, and let's make them get out of this run game. Do to Tennessee what Tennessee did to Baltimore, because you won't be able to stop him running. That you will not stop that motor. That's what I call him, that motor. You see that commercial when that dude sitting up there, he putting gas in the gas tank, and he's a man, half motorcycle. He's a motor. And he said, what do you got in gas? Putting in gas. What do you got in this? In the big coke? I'm drinking gas. That's what Derrick Henry is. He's a motor coming down here, man. I mean, it's incredible watching this big dude run. He turned Earl Thomas into a blocker for him. You know, when Earl came at him, he stiffed on him so much. Earl turned all the way around, looked like he was blocking for the man. And I was Earl got to go explain that to his son. You know, Dad, how could you let him do you like that? You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. They cannot expect to do it defensively, especially the Chiefs defense, who's given up a lot of run yards. They have to try to do that offensively by putting up big plays and getting them out of their run game.
Who is physically, Michael, the biggest running back you ever saw? I'd feel like Derrick Henry's got to be in the conversation. He's Christian Okoye big. He is Eddie George big.
Yeah, but with a little bit of with more speed though.
Oh yeah. Oh, but with 4.4 flat burner speed.
Right, with one flat burner speed, because you see him breaking out, and that's what's amazing. Because you usually think, okay, let's get him, slow him down, and let other people get on him. But once he gets rolling downhill, he's a tough out. And I don't know that I saw a guy that runs like that at 260. You know, I played with Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker's a big dude, but not like that. Not like that. I mean, Christian Okoye was a big dude, but he didn't run like that.
No.
You know, nowhere near like that, man. And I mean, it's just, it's one thing to be big and strong, but you got to always remember the equation for strength and speed. Speed is strength times two. Speed is power times two. So to have that kind of strength, that kind of power, and then put speed on it doubles the strength and power, and now you got a problem. And that's exactly what Derrick Henry is.
If you're Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator for the Packers, is there anything you can do schematically to disadvantage the 49ers, or do you simply have to look at Aaron Rodgers and go, be you?
Well, you're going to let Aaron Rodgers be him anyway, because that's your best opportunity. But I tell you what I would start looking at to try to minimize what San Francisco does on defense if I'm Green Bay. I'm trying to put together a short passing game. I want the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands in 2.5 seconds each play. That same thing we just talked about with Bill Walsh, I'll take these 4 or 5 yard plays. I just have to move them all the way down the field and get that defensive front frustrated, because every time they get to me, I'm letting the ball go. Every 2.5 seconds, I'm letting the ball go 2 seconds. I'm letting the ball go 2 seconds. I'm letting the ball go. So now you get tired rushing, and you get frustrated that you're not getting to the hit. Now, the only problem is I see Tom Brady playing like that, but Aaron Rodgers likes to hold on to the ball too long sometimes, trying to make the play up the field, and he's not patient enough to just matriculate the ball down the field. That's why I make it's a difficult thing for Green Bay to turn and do the thing they need to do to beat San Francisco. Because to beat San Francisco, you got to go and take 4 yards here, 3 yards there, 4 yards here, and go all the way down the field and wear out that front. You'll wear out everybody. I just don't see Nick Bosa wearing down. That boy, he has a motor, man. He had it in high school when I watched him at St. Thomas, my old high school, and I see it now. He just has a motor that keeps going. But you'll wear everybody else out. And then after you wear everybody else out, you're going to roll away from Bosa.
The Hall of Famer, Michael Irvin, here on 95.7 The Game. It sounds like you think the Niners are going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, well, and I told you that weeks ago. And I was just watching the last game. I was studying some and watching the last game. You said that was a dominating performance last time. Now, I don't think it'll be that easy this time. You know, it was 23-0 going to half. It was a dominating performance last time. I just don't think it'll be that way. But I do believe that San Francisco will win this football game. And I will see you guys in Miami.
Was this their easiest path as you look back at it, or would it have made any difference?
And that's the thing I said. And when everybody – remember when San Fran was going through those 3 8-win teams, they it was the gauntlet. Everybody said they wouldn't come through it. And then when they came through it, everybody said, I don't know, because the defense, what was wrong with the defense? The defense is falling off. I said, no. This is what will solidify them and get them to the Super Bowl, because they went through these hard teams. Baltimore was over there playing the Cincinnati's of the world, you know, so getting false readings on how good they are. They were over there playing teams they would never see again, while San Fran was beating teams that they were going to see again, and that was going to be the parameter for what made the difference. And I think that's what made the difference. Okay, now you at number one seed, you came in, and Tennessee came up here, and you were not prepared for Tennessee. But what San Fran went through, no matter who comes in there, and I'm honestly believing, no matter which route they would have had to take to get there, that they would be right where they are right now because of that season and that gauntlet of season that they had during the season, that gauntlet, I call it, during the season.
After watching Robert Saleh's unit just mow down Kevin Stefanski, did you think that the Browns were going to hire the Stefanski and not Robert Saleh?
Well, that would have been, you know, the thing to do off of earning. If you said who earned the job, that would have been the correct thing to do. But it's not off who earned the job. It's also off of what do you have on the job when you get to the job. And what you have on the job when you get to the job is a young quarterback that you're trying to win over. And think about it. If you go and bring in the defensive head coach and you bring in a great offensive coordinator and he connects with the young quarterback and then they take off as a unit, the offensive unit takes off, or even the team takes off. Now somebody's coming to give that offensive coordinator a head coaching job, and you're going to be stuck back starting all back over again with an offensive unit with your young quarterback. So I understand why Cleveland went the route that they went, because they wanted somebody that can connect with Baker Mayfield and be with him for a while with the top position already in the NFL, so somebody couldn't come and steal him away. There's no doubt Saleh earned it, but for what was on the job that he had already earned, they had to go offensive coach, I think.
That said, if the reports are true that the Browns want their head coach to turn in the coach's game plan to the owner and the analytics department on Friday, and then have another meeting with the analytics department on Saturday, who won this, Stefanski or Saleh? Because I think it might have been Saleh.
I totally understand what you're saying from the standpoint of what hornet's nest are we walking into. You know, what if the turning it over to the owner and all of these guys, if they knew how to do it, they wouldn't need me to do it. Go do it yourself. Like, you're going to check all of my work as if you have dominion over my work because you have knowledge over the game plan that I'm putting in or what I'm trying to accomplish with this team, or you have any knowledge of the team. Then go do it yourself. They can't do it themselves. Now, they just want to check on everything, I guess. I don't know why they would want to check on anything. I'm sure some of the stuff that he'll put in front of them, they won't even understand to the degree that it will really make a difference. I really believe that. But this is the route that they're trying to go, and it's Cleveland. Cleveland. That's all you can say.
Michael Irvin here on 95.7 The Game. So what do you think? Jimmy Johnson is about a 42 regular in the jacket. He's going to need one. What did it mean to you to watch your former head coach get his entrance into the Hall of Fame?
D-Man, listen, and you know, Jimmy and his past and what he's done in the football, you know, I was so proud of it and so happy. And Jimmy came to Miami the same year I got there, you know. So when I tweeted, that's why I said my coach, and I know what he meant to me. I know what he's been to me through all of this whole process, and to see him get his rightful due. After honestly, and I love Jerry Jones also, but after honestly seeing him get slighted on his due in the Ring of Honor here with Dallas, because of the beef he has with Jerry, you know, I felt bad about that. But to see him get this was incredible. You saw how emotional he is. He was. I've known Jimmy for most of my life. I'm 53 years old. I've known him for way over half of my life since I was 17, 18 years old. And I've never, in all of my life, I've never, ever seen him like he was when that man, when David Baker was put giving him the information and letting him put him on notice that he is now Hall of Fame. I've never seen him get that emotional, man. And it was touching. It was very touching. I was in my hotel room watching the games, and I caught myself crying. I was happy I was alone when I looked up. Like, I'm glad I'm by myself, you know, to see this. But then I did tweet about it.
We couldn't tell either of your stories without the other guy. So who really put the other guy into the Hall of Fame? Did you put him in or did he put you in?
I always tell Jimmy, listen, man, even in the patent business, they always go about who was out there first. I got to Miami, Jimmy came to Miami. I got to Dallas, then Jimmy came to Dallas. I told him, he owes me. Now, I will say this about Coach, and I appreciate it. He did tell me, even then, because I graduated after my junior year and then went to the NFL. I was coming to the NFL. Back then, you had to graduate to go early. So as I graduated, I had control over the draft. Green Bay teams wanted to draft me. I said, no, I'm not going to Green Bay. So if they drafted me, they would lose a draft choice, and I could apply for a supplemental draft because I could drop a class and go back to school. Jimmy said to me, he said, hey, I know this stuff you're playing with the NFL. I won't get in the way of it. But he said, if Dallas calls, you're going to Dallas. He told me then, he said, I got an oil friend who's probably going to buy the Cowboys soon, and I may be joining you. Dallas is the only team that did not call and get permission to draft me. They just drafted me, and I couldn't do anything about it because Jimmy had already warned me what was coming.
So what you're suggesting here is that Jimmy Johnson stalked you.
Yes, he did. Ray, you say he rode me to success like a fresh backpack on a school kid. That's what he did. He just rode me, man. But that's all right. I love him to death, man. Without him, honestly, I had just lost my father when I got to Miami. The first day I got to Miami, I got in a fight with an offensive lineman. Then I got in another fight because I was telling these guys, like everybody, they were trying to do all the freshman hazing. I said, I ain't got time for this. I got brothers and sisters that are broke and hungry back home. I didn't come for this. I came to try to help my family make a living, so I was getting in fights with everybody. And Jimmy was calling me to his office, and he looked at me. He said, Michael, he said, son, what is wrong with you, son? We're trying to give you an opportunity. You can't be fighting everybody on the team. We're going to fight everybody on the other side in other uniforms. And he said, son, you can just really, I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here for you. I'm not going to give up on you. I will always be here for you. And I can't tell you how much I appreciated that. Then I got ready to leave, and he said, hey, son, one more thing, son. He said, did you ever think about boxing? I mean, you really like to fight. You ever think about boxing?
Michael,
I was like, Coach, football's my game.
You are a treasure, man. Thank you so much, as always.
All right, guys. Good luck, guys. Good luck this week, man. But I know, well, you always need it, but you won't need it.
Yeah, so we'll talk to you before the Super Bowl. There he is, Michael Irvin, here on 95.7 The Game. By the way, this segment brought to you by Bay Alarm. Is your fire system compliant? Bay Alarm will make sure that you're up to code and compliant with all federal, state, and local regulations. Call and get protected today. Bay Alarm, what have you got to lose? You got nothing to lose if you stay right here, because we got Peter King joining us this hour. Don't you move a muscle. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
It is a Monster Monday here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Benjamin Moore Paints. Paint like no other, and by Dolan's Lumber, Windows, and Doors. If you haven't already, download the Radio.com app all week long. We're going to be getting you ready for the NFC title game leading up to it. Don't miss any of it. You can take us to work, take us to wherever you are, as long as your smartphone is with you, you got radio.com, we're with you. Make sure you favorite 95.7 The Game. 49ers are the favorite to get to the Super Bowl right now, as are the Kansas City Chiefs.
The lines opened. I just got the opening line. I don't know what they are right now. If they're at 6.5 or both are hanging around at 7. Tennessee.
They're both 7.5 right now.
Ooh, they're both 7.5. So there's a little moving. I am laying 7.5 in both instances if I am a gambler this week. I really think there is enough overwhelming. There's enough overwhelming a complete football team with the Niners, and there's enough overwhelming quick strike offense in Kansas City to where I like both to overcome 7.5. I would lean Derrick Henry with the upset if I had to. I think Derrick Henry's got a better chance of upsetting the Chiefs than Aaron Rodgers has of upsetting the Niners. And I, now that I just said that out loud, I can't believe I just said that out loud. But I'm saying it out loud, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, I mean, the 49ers already have that one game where they showed you the difference between them and Green Bay. Whereas Tennessee and Kansas City is more of a clean slate because Tennessee is different now than they were when Marcus Mariota was quarterback. So I'm not, you know, to me it's a difference between betting a game where you already think you've seen it and one where you really have no idea what you're looking at.
Well, what you haven't seen is the crazy part. Was there no Breida that day that they played the Packers? No, Quan Alexander. That's obvious. Was Tart out there that day?
When you win 37-9, whatever it was, 37-8, I think, it doesn't really matter if those guys are there or not. You've won by 30 points.
Right, and but it does matter when you're handicapping the next game and you're thinking, oh, so really the difference between what the Niners did when they faced the Packers last time, the two biggest differences would be this. Green Bay doesn't have a bye week, actually has a shorter week than the Niners do to prepare in only six practice days. They've got no bye week, a shorter week, and the Niners are healthier now than when they skinned them alive the first time around.
Yeah, but so, I mean, I don't know that would change your handicapping in any way. The team that won by 29 is the one that's healthier now and doesn't have a bye week for the other team to contend with. So the advantage only got wider. And I'm not saying you should give 30, but
right,
7.5 is doable.
And as someone who has seen many, many an Aaron Rodgers football game, I can only promise you this, that in the one game you assume it's over, that's where he beats you. That's how he kind of does it. But this is a really, really good-looking Niners team, and they just have all the parts that are moving in the right direction right now. I mean, Kyle Shanahan is entering the give that guy a little extra time territory, and he's going to out-scheme you. How the 49ers started that game defensively with the three and out to open the day, that was a tone setter right away. And then the offense takes over, and this is where you're looking at brilliance happening in real time. You get that fantastic catch by Debo, then Sanders makes a couple of big grabs in a row. Jimmy hits George Kittle to get real deep in territory, and then what do you know, Kendrick Bourne, bang, bang, Niner gang. Like, it doesn't get any better than that to start a game than how they started that game. And it was flawless. It was exactly the opposite of what I think Mike Zimmer was expecting. And I think that's where they got. The 49ers knew that it was going to be Dalvin Cook on first down, second down, and then take their Kirk Cousins chances on third. And that happened over and over and over again. The 49ers came out throwing it like they weren't going to run the ball. And after that, and one or two other plays, they decided to commit to the running game in a way that this franchise hasn't since, I don't know, it's been a while since they try to run like this.
I have to correct myself. The first big Derrick Henry game of the year was the week they played Kansas City. He went for 180. So,
Loss or a win?
And they won 35-32.
So that game was at Nissan Stadium, right? In Tennessee?
Yes.
Okay. Was that right after they made the Tannehill change?
No, Tannehill got the job the week before.
Okay.
But he threw for 330. So they had not yet committed to the idea that Derrick Henry could crush your spirit. He's 23 for 188.
Derrick Henry is the sexiest girl in the room. I mean, we cannot stop staring at Derrick Henry. Are we maybe missing Ryan Tannehill's better than we thought?
No, we're not.
I don't know, man.
He doesn't throw the ball at all anymore. He hands the ball off to Derrick Henry. That is it. I mean, and I'm not downing Ryan Tannehill because he's doing the thing that allows them to win, which is what he should be doing. But, you know, when he first got the job, they wanted him to throw the ball. He was throwing the ball 30 times a game, you know.
That wasn't a Matt Moore Kansas City game. Was Mahomes playing?
It was Mahomes.
Okay. 888-957-9570 is the number. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to have Peter King join us, one of the biggest names in covering the sport that we're covering wall-to-wall today, joins us next. I got to spend 1 minute on the other moving part of today's show. The Houston Astros, my friends, today had one of the worst days of disciplinary ouch that any major league franchise has ever had. The commissioner came down hard, then their own owner came down even harder. Jeff Passan was the first with the news that Jeffrey Lunau and A.J. Hinch were suspended. That is the GM and manager. They would then be fired later in the afternoon by Jim Crane. The Houston Astros have been stripped of first and second round draft picks in back-to-back drafts. It is punitive. It is comprehensive. It is the type of punishment that you didn't think Major League Baseball really had the balls to throw at anyone over a sign-stealing scandal, which means that the Astros were so dead-to-rights guilty on this that it was overwhelming. They couldn't basically do anything but start calling up the death sentence, which the odds have not changed, really, for the Astros next year, which says something about who managers are right now, but... Man, it's a stunning day for Major League Baseball, Ray.
It is, but the trick here is to see what he does when the Red Sox thing is done. Because he's going to have to come down hard on not only Alex Cora, who was part of the Houston thing, but also the Boston thing. And let's see what he does with the general manager as well. Because a one-off punishment of this level still emboldens everybody else to go, well, you haven't caught me yet. But if you double down on the Red Sox and just go, well, your two guys are suspended for a year, and we're expecting you, John Henry, to fire them both, or we'll do it ourselves, now you've got a level of discipline that gives the commissioner power that a commissioner hasn't had since Bart Giamatti banned Pete Rose for life.
It's overwhelming reach. It isn't just cutting down the dead tree. It's the dead tree and the branches, even if they've now grown over other franchises' yards. It's staggering.
No, you have to do this and keep doing it until the stuff stops. It's what I've said all the time is if you're going to punish somebody, you need to overpunish if you want the behavior to cease. And that's why we still have PEDs in baseball, because they've never wanted to punish guys for that. And even with 50-game suspensions and 80-game suspensions, guys still keep getting busted because the reward for taking PEDs is still far greater than the risk of punishment.
A staggering weekend of football, a staggering afternoon of baseball headlines, and it's going to give away to a national championship game tonight. So, yeah, we're going to have plenty coming up tomorrow. But coming up next, it's Peter King, so don't you move a muscle. 888-957-9570. More of your calls in our final hour. Our biggest segment of the day begins with Peter King next, brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromise.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Mel Brooks once famously said, "It's good to be the king." I think he was talking about Peter King, 95.7 The Game NFL Insider. You can see him on NBC Sports. His name is synonymous with covering football oh so well. By the way, so is Richard Sherman's name. He's pretty good at covering football oh so well. Peter, brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Visited by Friedman'sAppliance.com today. Peter, thank you for joining us. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Matt Kolsky is out sick today, which means it's just you, me, and Ray. How's it going?
How dare he be sick on such a momentous day?
That's what I was saying. How dare? What's going on with these kids these days? No, look.
He couldn't get a helmet that fits right.
Yeah, well, that's another guy's problem. Peter, are the 49ers the best team left in the tournament? Yes or no?
I think they are. But, I mean, I really like the Chiefs, and I think the Chiefs might be able to outscore everybody. The key is, if there's a Kansas City-San Francisco Super Bowl, the interesting part of that matchup will be, if Mahomes gets enough time, you know, he's going to make a lot of plays. But the great thing about the 49ers right now is that the way they play, they don't give offenses time to breathe. And especially when they're at full health on the defensive front, probably the two most impressive things that we saw this weekend are the explosive nature of the Kansas City passing game and the San Francisco defensive front, which just eats people alive. And, I mean, I hate leaving Derrick Henry out of that, but the Chiefs scored 51 points in about 10 minutes. That was pretty impressive.
It really was. Could you even imagine, not to just gloss past what happened and all look ahead our whole conversation here, but the D Ford revenge game? I mean, the storylines would be rich if it were D Ford trying to take down Patrick Mahomes. That would be something else. I thought that Kyle Shanahan is now like, he just put himself in one of those, you give him enough time to prepare for you, you're in an awful lot of trouble conversations. He was probably in that before we saw it, but we just saw it for real in a playoff game. And I think that he is now a gold standard of schematics, is he not?
I think he's right up there. I mean, he's such a smart guy. He just is so impressive to me. You know, last night I was in Green Bay, and I thought that Matt LaFleur had one of the coolest, most impressive play designs that I've seen this season. And I don't know if you guys remember it, and I don't mean to be changing the subject, but it reminds me because he is such a, he's such a similar guy to Kyle, you know, such an imaginative, smart guy. When I think of young, I mean, he, McVay, Kyle are all really good, but their first touchdown last night was absolutely amazing because I would say, probably half of all pass routes right now in the NFL, half, have some element of legal picks. They're called rubs, okay? And today, I just kept thinking about it. I ended up talking to LaFleur about it last night. But the first touchdown, there was a fake rub route. And as soon as Geronimo Allison and Devontae Adams came together, they just immediately turned on a dime and went in opposite directions, and the two corners covering them were just left saying, who do we cover? And they both covered Adams. Adams beat him for a touchdown, and the ironic part is Geronimo Allison was open for a touchdown. So Aaron Rodgers had two easy choices that he could have made touchdown with, but that is exactly the kind of football that Kyle Shanahan designs too.
With all that said, how does Matt LaFleur design something that negates all the things the 49ers do well? Because the sense is that this can't be just leave it to Aaron, he'll figure something out.
Right.
On the other hand, Rodgers is such a force in the huddle as well as the dress, as well as the locker room, that there's only so much you can do that's sort of outside the box with him. So how does LaFleur navigate to get the kind of game plan that solves both problems?
When I left him last night, the last thing he said to me, this was an hour after the game, the last thing he said to me was, I really got to go to school on that game. That's my big, big assignment. I got to microanalyze every play in that game, and we have to figure a way so that Aaron can be effective. Now, Ray, that game, to me, I thought that the biggest factor in that game was that the Packers couldn't block them. And I think when I look back at that game, because I covered that game, I don't know, the middle of the second quarter, I think Sam Farmer of the LA Times was sitting next to me, and I just said, this is really, and you know, these teams could play 8 or 10 times, and I don't know if the Packers would win because they can't block the 49ers. And it's the exact same thing. You can have the greatest quarterback in the world, but if he doesn't have enough time, there's no way he's going to be an effective quarterback. And that's what I saw in that game on, I think it was November 28th. And that's, to me, the biggest threat that I see to the Packers. And again, look, I think what you're going to end up seeing the Packers do in this game is consistently they're going to take one guy out of their route system. You know, they're going to send, on a lot of plays, I think they're going to send one fewer guy out, and they're going to keep an extra blocker in. That's just an absolute total gut feeling, because they just, you know, doing something the way they did it 7 weeks ago will just be hitting your head against the wall.
Peter King here on 95.7 The Game, and is – physical as the 49ers were, as many times as they ran the ball, 47, which I thought would be some very much an outlier number. It's not throughout playoff history.
No.
47 rushing attempts is what teams who pull away and play run and hide with the clock are looking for in a playoff game. It's not an outlier number. Now, another layer of that would be, so how many of those ever ripped off 12 runs in a row? Peter, how hard is it to run 12 times against a professional football team? Forget about a playoff team. I'm talking about like the Detroit Lions.
I'll never forget. I covered the Giants for 4 years in the 80s. And one time Parcells admitted to me he only had 4 running plays in his playbook. And I said, how possibly? You're an NFL team. How do you have 4 running plays? And he goes, when they can stop our run, then we'll put some more in there. But they were so good running the ball that no matter who they put back there, that they just kept doing it. They kept doing the same thing over and over again.
Who was Bill coaching when he said that to you? Was that Giants Bill or Patriots Bill?
That was Giants Bill.
Joe Morris.
That was 1986 or 87, you know. I'm not young enough to have covered the Patriots during Patriots. But I mean, I was there occasionally, but I covered the Giants daily. I think Kyle Shanahan is an intelligent person. I'd love to see the ratio of, or how many consecutive runs that Tennessee has had in these two playoff games. I mean, the 49ers and Tennessee each ran at 69% the other day, which is like 1942 football. And the reason they did it is exactly what you said. You stop us and we'll do something else. But since you can't stop us, we're going to keep doing this and we're just going to continue to chew the clock.
Is there, since you brought up the Titans, is there anything, and I'm going to ask the same question I did about the Packers, is there anything that they can do defensively to deter Kansas City? Because I don't know how many yards it would take for Derrick Henry to keep up with the Kansas City offense.
Well, it's really not about yards, Ray.
Well, carries then.
It's about time of possession. Do you remember, you guys obviously will remember, when a Giants team in 1990 came to San Francisco and beat the 49ers 15-13 in the NFC Championship game?
Trey Junkin game.
Yes, yeah. No, that wasn't the Trey Junkin game. That was 2001.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah, but the 1990 game, that was the game where they fumbled. I think it was Roger Craig fumbled, and Gary Reasons recovered at the end. But that was the game. The Giants didn't score a touchdown. They got 5 field goals from Matt Barr. And the 49ers, you know, in later years, a lot of people in the 49ers thought that that was the one game that they just wished they had back because they felt they were a lot better than the Giants. That same day in Buffalo, Oakland played the Bills in the AFC Championship game, and the Bills won the game 51-3. It could have been 81-3. And it was just an embarrassing display for Oakland, but an all-powerful display for the Oakland Raiders. So the Raiders and the Bills played first, and the Giants played second. And the Giants, the TV was on in their locker room, and so they saw the absolute shredding of this team. And after the game, after the Giants-49ers game, another weird point about that week, that was one of the very few times that there wasn't a bye week in between the Super Bowl. The Giants got on the plane at SFO after the game and flew directly to Tampa, woke up Monday morning and started practicing for the Super Bowl. But when they got on the bus leaving Candlestick that day, Bill Parcells turned to his offensive coordinator, Ron Earhart, and said, play clock ball. In other words, clock ball is how Tennessee is. If they do win this game, I guarantee you that's how they're going to win this game. Long drives, suck the clock out, give the Chiefs as few possessions as they can. In that game, the Giants had the ball for 41 minutes. The Bills only had it for 19 in that Super Bowl, and the Giants ended up winning 20-19. That, trust me, is the exact kind of game that Tennessee is going to have to play to win this one.
Peter King joining us here on 95.7 The Game as we move into our 5 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.